What a great reminder of what it was that we celebrated just last week. And one of the things, and this kind of came a theme with several people that I talked to over the last week or even weeks, is this picture of, you know, Easter, we celebrate it as followers of Christ. We celebrate it all year long. You know, Christmas is one of those things where we kind of focus on the birth of our Savior. And yeah, we kind of have our season. We don't play Christmas music until Thanksgiving's over. And then we have the season where we have our 4 weeks, if you will. And we get to listen to the music and we get to celebrate and kind of look forward to the birth of Christ. That's all good and well. I love it. However, when it comes to the cross and Christ and the resurrection, that's what we celebrate over and over and over again as followers of Christ. And I just love the fact that we're not done celebrating it. You know, yeah, Easter is over. Maybe all of your Easter eggs are gone or found, or maybe you have some still hidden in your house that were real eggs, and you'll find them in a week or so. But other than that, we have this incredible truth, this incredible picture that Jesus Christ has risen from the grave, the tomb is empty, and the song just celebrated it. And we're going to see even more of that this morning in looking at this very familiar story that perhaps is maybe one of the most well-known stories. We refer to it as a Bible story. We often refer to it almost even as a kid's story. But when we think of the person of Daniel, when we started this book of Daniel, automatically your mind goes to one story in particular. And it's Daniel in the lion's den. We're pretty familiar with the story. We kind of can tell you, maybe we know some of the characters by name, aside from Daniel. There's not a whole lot of other actual names that are given. But in the midst of this story, we find some pieces in there that are really quite astounding. And I hope that you can approach this story that you've heard so many times, almost like that Christmas story, approach it with such a way as like, okay, what else is in here that maybe I have neglected, maybe that I've missed? And one of the things that we're going to see, I believe, in this story of Daniel, Daniel chapter 6, the story of Daniel in the lion's den, is we're going to see this parallel of actually Jesus Christ. Almost a foretelling. It's not prophetic in that way, but I do believe that maybe God had an intention, the way he orchestrated this story, this sequence of events with Daniel, to point to the fact that one day he was going to send a Savior much in the same way. And Jesus in the Gospels, we find that like in Matthew, I want to say it was chapter 24 of Matthew, where Matthew actually refers back and refers to Daniel as being the prophet. There's been some people who have, historians say, well, you know, even Bible historians, different groups, whether Jews or Gentiles, have said, well, Daniel wasn't even really a prophet. Well, Jesus himself referred to Daniel as the prophet. And so I think we should take that for what it is. If Jesus said it, let's hold to that even more so. So we've been looking at this book of Daniel. We've gone through five chapters. It was just a few weeks ago that we were in Daniel chapter 5. We're in Daniel chapter 6 today. Where we left off, if you remember, was Daniel was getting up in age. He was in his 70s at the time. Almost had been swept under the rug, if you will, as far as his importance as a person in that kingdom. It was still Babylon at the time. And what we found is the King Nebuchadnezzar, he was gone. There have been a number of kings that have come in. We looked at those. And now we get to this guy. He's considered the king, but he's actually an understudy. He's a son, if you will, of the rightful king who's actually down in a southern region of Babylon at that time. And in the city of Babylon, he leaves his son Belshazzar, who is, in a sense, the king then of the city. Well, as this king is celebrating, he's partying, and he's having his revelry, he decides that, you know what would be really cool, everybody, is if we got those sacred vessels that my grandfather brought over from Jerusalem, and we use those to drink our alcohol from. So wouldn't that be fun? I mean, that would be like in the face of you, God. And so they did that. And when they did that, the astounding thing happened. There was actually writing then that took place. It says as they were doing it, there was this hand that appeared and wrote this on the wall. And it also specified that it wrote this on the wall right near where the lampstand was. And I'm convinced that that was intentional. It's like, okay, there's a lamp there. No one's going to miss this. Everyone, look at this. And we remember, we talked about this last time. Okay, here it is, mene, mene, tekel, and it would be pronounced parson, and this is how it would be written. So it was written in that capacity. There's the hand, and it writes it on the wall, and the king sees this, and he's extremely troubled by it. It says in the scriptures he actually turned pale, and his knees began to tremble like he was going to faint, if you will. This was pretty serious. for him. And so he asks his astrologers, his wise guys, and just we see this pattern over and over again throughout the book of Daniel. And he asks them, come in, tell me what was written here and what does it mean? And they're all going, we have no idea, man. We're clueless. And then the queen mother comes in. She hears the ruckus and she says, okay, Belshazzar, you're kind of a moron. Why don't you ask for the one who's done this over and over and over again? Ask for Daniel. He'll come in and tell you what it means. So they call in Daniel. And here's this young king, old guy. There's something to be said about that. And his wisdom comes in. Yeah, I can tell you what it says, but you're not going to like the message. In a nutshell, the message basically said, numbered, counted, divided. And basically what the message that God was giving to this king was, guess what? Your sins are great in number. They're numbered upon numbered. You are a sinful man, you are a sinful man, you are a sinful man. And not only that, I'm counting them against you. You've been given opportunity to repent. In fact, if you look at Nebuchadnezzar and his past, you did not follow the ways of Nebuchadnezzar. He gave you a great guideline. He was a sinner as well. And in so much so, in fact, that he was actually sent out into the wilderness. And then he came to this point where he realized who God was. And he looked towards heaven and was restored and said, learn from, if you will, your ancestors a little bit here, but you have not done that. And so you continue in your sin. And so then because of that, I have counted them against you, and then you will be divided. In other words, you will be cut down. And that's exactly what we saw. And in fact, it's said in the scripture that very night, Belshazzar lost his life. And we talked about how the Persians and the Medo-Persian Empire came in, and they came in through the aqueducts. They cut off the water flow so they actually could get in. These thick walls couldn't be penetrated, but they snuck in through there. And while they were even partying, while Belshazzar was drunk, in comes King Cyrus's army, and they cut him down, and that very night he lost his life. And Daniel was in the midst of all of this. He was in the midst of when they were first exiled from Jerusalem. We talked about that. Daniel was in the mix of that. He was in the mix when they were evaluated and kind of lofted up as to great, wise guys. He was in the midst of it. Well, we saw the three guys in the fiery furnace. Daniel wasn't necessarily present there, but he was still elevated as a lofty figure in that capacity. We see him side by side with Nebuchadnezzar, and Daniel is in the midst of it. And God has a purpose for Daniel throughout all of this, and we still see it exist here in this story today. And so here's what we're going to do. We're going to get started in this story of Daniel. We left off Daniel chapter 5, and it said that very night, we just talked about this, Belshazzar, king of the Babylonians, was slain, and Darius the Mede took over the kingdom at the age of 62. And I put this in here because we don't know a lot about this Darius the Mede. In fact, there's several theories about who this Darius was. One is the fact that this Darius the Mede was a real character, but this is all we know about him. That's a possibility where what we find here in Daniel chapter 5 and then following in Daniel chapter 6 and such, that's really all the account that there is. Some will hold to that. Okay, so he's a real character, but that's all we know. But there's other theories because when we look at some of the historical documents and we look at who were kings of Persia, we look at who were kings of Babylon, and where does this Darius fit in? There's some Darius's mentioned. You'll find a Darius mentioned in Nehemiah chapter 12. Well, the problem of it is that one specifies as it's Darius the Persian instead of Darius the Mede. And yeah, it's a Medo-Persian Empire, but there were two very distinct areas. So we have to kind of reconcile this a little bit. So there's two additional theories. And one is basically, and this is the one we kind of hold to, is that this Darius the Mede is actually the same person as King Cyrus. And there's some strong evidence for that. We're going to look at that here in just a moment. But the reality of it is, when we look at some of this contextual language, Darius, the name Darius, the word Darius could literally mean almost as a prefix, a title, almost like Caesar. And so when you see like Caesar Augustus and Julius Caesar, that word Caesar refers more under the idea of the title, the position, as opposed to actually Darius, the name. And so that being the case, what we can find is Darius actually could be pointing to King Cyrus, and that's in a sense his title. We see it here in the end of this chapter, Daniel chapter 6. If we challenge our understanding of interpretation, there's a particle here, the word and. So most translate it as the word and, but it can also be translated in something else. So just note this real quickly. So Daniel prospered. I know I'm giving away the radical ending of Daniel in the lion's den. Guess what? He doesn't die. Okay. Sorry, it's kind of like the Titanic. You remember when the Titanic movie came out? Spoiler alert, the boat sinks. Okay? So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. So the word "and" could actually literally be translated also into this capacity, that is. It's the same word. And so what that would mean then is, so Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius, that is the reign of Cyrus the Persian, basically meaning that they, in a sense, could be the same person. One referring to the title, one referring to the actual man. And it's also not uncommon that some of these ancient kings, when they would enter into their kingship, their names would actually be changed. So this is one. There's a couple other theories that could potentially make sense, but this is the one that most scholars will hold to, is that the Cyrus and Darius are actually the same person. It fits in a lot of these ways. Let's get back into it. So Daniel chapter 6. So it pleased Darius. Here's the king Darius. It pleased Darius. Darius made a great decision. It was a vast kingdom. When the Medes and the Persians, they come in and they conquer Babylon, they just expounded their territory astronomically. I mean, huge chunks of real estate that had just been added to them. So it pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps. Satraps would basically be police officers, officials. Some would, a little translation would be more like sheriffs, to rule throughout the kingdom with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. So here I have this picture. You got 120 of these police officers. You got three governors over them. One of these three governors is Daniel. This Daniel that we keep talking about. At this point, this Daniel would have been about 82, at least 82 years old. And now you're going to see, you know, if we think of Daniel in the lion's den, he's a lot older than some of these cartoon pictures we see, you know. So one of them, who was Daniel? The satraps were made accountable to them, so these sheriffs were made accountable to these three governors so that the king might not suffer loss. They're basically there to protect the king. You know, they're there to kind of ensure that no one's going to kind of take over certain things and so that the king's not going to suffer loss of territory, etc. Now, Daniel was so distinguished. He so distinguished himself among the administrators and the police officers and the sheriffs by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. Daniel had a reputation beyond reputation. Here he is, 82 years old. Remember, he was exiled at roughly probably about the age of 17. He's been in this area a long time. And in this time, he's done nothing but been able to have his reputation built, not on his own work, I believe, but on the faithfulness that God has placed to him. He's built up his reputation so strong. Everyone knew this Daniel. This king so much, and he didn't hide the fact that he's like, man, look at this Daniel. I'm going to make him ruler of this whole place. You watch. Well, some things happen. So at this, the administrators, they hear this, oh, man, Daniel's going to take over this rule. I kind of wanted that for myself. We need to really cut this guy down a little bit. Plus, there's obviously the jealousy factor, I think, going on here, but there could also be this idea that these other satraps and governors and officials, they came from a different stock, if you will. They didn't come from Israel. They didn't come from Judea, where God would have been sovereign. So they would have had these, you know, puny small g gods, in a sense, and they would have basically been able to manipulate people. And they saw this manipulation of people as a way of life, where they can build up their resources, they can build up their financial status, they can also build up their title status, if you will. But this God, this Daniel and his God, they're kind of, they don't fit, because they're afraid of this Daniel with his reputation. If he gets put into this place, what's going to happen to us? I'm willing to bet it's going to be something with integrity, and I'd rather not have that. And so there's a jealousy factor. There's also that what's this going to affect us type factor that's going into here. But they were unable to do so. They were unable to find anything, any grounds or charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs. They were unable to do so. Reminds you, if you think about that verse right there in verse 4, very similar to a story that we find repeated in the Gospels, where some of these religious rulers were trying to grasp at straws to find anything they could to accuse Christ. And they kept coming up short. They kept coming up empty-handed over and over again. See the parallel? And it gets deeper. So they could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Tough question. What would it take for someone to dig into your past? What would they find? I shudder to think. I don't want anyone digging in my past. That's why I'll never run for president. You know, already we've got, 20 candidates, at least, or more, running for presidency for this next election. I can guarantee, what are people doing? Right now, they got the shovels out, and they're starting to dig. They're doing exactly what these guys did here. They're digging. They're trying to find anything that they can take and turn it and twist it against any kind of a candidate, and that's exactly what these people did. The beauty of this situation was, is they found nothing. And that's exactly what we see in Jesus Christ. There was no grounds to accuse him. You see the parallel. So they could find no way. They could find no corruption. He was trustworthy in all of his ways. Finally, these men said, we will never find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless, look at this. This is so mind-blowingly crazy. He says, there's nothing that we can do to find charges unless it has something to do with the law of his God. There's one avenue that this man Daniel holds to so steadfastly that that's the only place we're going to be able to catch him. And so they come up with a plan. Look at this. These people that are against Daniel, and what wrong has he done? I can't see anything. They can't see anything. And this is exactly what Jesus told us that we would experience when we choose to follow him. John chapter 7. We covered this in that John series that we went through. There's a series of them here. The world can't hate you. And this is where Jesus is talking to his brothers specifically. Okay, just before he goes to the feast. So the world can't hate you, but it does hate me because I, why? Because I accuse it of evil. Daniel's life, if he had been put into that high position, his life couldn't help but reveal the wickedness of these other men. They couldn't have it. Cut him off. Let's get Daniel out of here. Chapter 15, verse 18. This is where Jesus is praying for his disciples. He said, if the world hates you, remember that it hated me first. The world would love you as one of its own if you belong to it, but you are no longer part of the world. I chose you to come out of the world, so it hates you. Chapter 17, verse 14. I have given them your word. And the world hates them because they do not belong to the world, just as I do not belong to the world. I am not asking you to take them out of the world, but to keep them safe from the evil one. Is that not a picture of Daniel? He's living in exile, a resident alien, going through his whole life he has spent in Babylon. He is literally in the world, but he has continued to live his life in such a way that he's not of the world. That is a lofty goal, and we talk about it a lot, but it is so extremely difficult. I don't think any of us can or have achieved it, and that's why we need a Savior. Daniel chapter 6. So, these administrators, these satraps, they come up with their plan. They went as a group to the king. Sounds just like the religious leaders in Jesus' time. They go as a group to form this accusation, not one at a time. They're going as a group. And they say, may King Darius live forever. The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors, and governors have, look at this word, all agreed. Every one of us has agreed on this, which is not true because I'm pretty sure they didn't include Daniel on this decision, okay? And he would have been one of them. They have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or human being during the next 30 days, except you, your majesty, shall be thrown into the den of lions. You know, so Darius, I don't know if he's just kind of foolish, but I think the bigger issue is he cares a lot. He cares deeply about what people think of him. I think he's insecure. And here you have these people that have approached him and said, this is what we think, king. You could go against us, but I got to be honest with you. It's like that's not going to be in your favor. Darius wants people to like him. And if we're all honest, we all want people to like us. No one likes to go to school and feel like you're the only one that doesn't fit in. Nobody likes to go to school and feel like you're the outsider. We all, in a sense, want to act in such a certain way. We know that in our culture because we all, for the most part, dress alike. Okay? Maybe there's a few exceptions, but for the reality of it is we almost all will conform to some capacity in how we dress because we want to, in a sense, to be accepted. Okay, and to a degree, that's good because there are certain cultures that we should not dress like. Okay. Now, too far. Now, your majesty, he said, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered. It's fascinating rules when it came to the Medes and the Persians. They had the law that once the law was done, you couldn't back out on the law. And it was literally like was writing it in stone, boom, there it is. And this is exactly what they're trying to get him to do. Put it in writing so that it cannot be altered in accordance with the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be repealed. So the king, okay, guys, okay, I want you to like me. I want you to be happy with me. So he goes ahead and he does that. So now when Daniel learned, this is just astounding. When Daniel learns what has been done, it's not a secret. They let Daniel know right off the get-go exactly what was being done. So when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, what does he do? He went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened toward Jerusalem. And three times a day, he got down on his knees and he prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. Now, Daniel had three options. So this was basically a 30-day decree. For the next 30 days, no one should pray to anyone but you. And these guys, they knew 30 days would be enough because Daniel would not go 30 days without praying. I think for some of us, maybe our reaction would be like, well, it's only 30 days. I'll just stop praying for 30 days and I'll start it up on day 31. I'll be okay. We'll find a loophole. We'll find a way out of it. It makes sense. That seems logical. The other thing that Daniel could have done, he could have kept praying, but he could have done it in secret. That's a totally reasonable reaction to what we look at in our lives. Would we have done it? Would we have kept praying? If we're in Nazi Germany back in the 1940s, and you're being threatened for persecution, and you can find it elsewhere here today, I just can't be as specific. So you're in Nazi Germany, and here you are, and you've been given the decree, you will not pray. If you do, you'll be killed. What are you going to do? Are you going to stop praying? I probably wouldn't, but I'm not going to do it in public. Just like the Jews and the Poles and all of those who were being accused in Nazi Germany, what did they do? They hid. I don't blame them. I don't blame them one bit. I would have hid as well. I'm not saying what they did was wrong, but Daniel did something astoundingly different. Absolutely astoundingly different. He goes to the window. He opens up the window that faces Jerusalem. He looks at Jerusalem. He knows exactly what has been promised to him. As he looks at Jerusalem, I know for a fact that he's probably there thinking, God laid out a promise. Remember that Jeremiah thing? I know the plans I have for you. That was written to Daniel, and Daniel could read it. He had heard it. He knew the plans, and he said, I've read that. I remember that letter. And he said, I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you. And that's the plan. That's the prosperous. That's the promise that had been made to him and his people that had been exiled, that one day you're going back. So as he looked at Jerusalem, I'm sure he's thinking, God's going to do what he's going to do. Our people will be restored whether I live or whether I die. I'm not changing a thing. That is astounding. So he prays, and look what he does. He gives thanks to his God, just as he'd done before. But he also prays for help. He says, these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking God for help. So here comes the group of people. They come up to Daniel. Ha ha, we knew we'd get you. And here's the decree. We know that that's the case. And they say, we've caught you. But they find him and he's praying for help. Look at these verses. Psalm 118, verses 5 through 9 says, in my distress, could this be Daniel's prayer? I think it could be. I'm not saying that it is. I'm not putting these words into Daniel's mouth. But in my distress, I prayed to the Lord and the Lord answered me and set me free. The Lord is for me, so I will have no fear. You see no fear in this life of Daniel. I am not a Daniel. I'd like to say I was. I'd like to say I am. But I know the things that cause me concern. I know my anxious thoughts. I know the fears that I have. And I compare it to this man Daniel, and it's like, I don't fit whatsoever. But I'm convinced that God allowed Daniel and empowered Daniel in such a way that, again, it caused these people that when they saw Jesus Christ living in such a way, I'm sure they reflected on this Daniel and knew this prophet Daniel and had this parallel. It's like, wow, God is doing something here, though they chose to ignore it. So the Lord is for me, so I will have no fear. What can mere people do to me? I love that. What can mere people? We're going to find out what mere people can do to Daniel. Yes, the Lord is for me. He will help me. I will look in triumph at those who hate me. It is better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in people. It is better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in princes. We see it again in Hebrews 13, as quoted from Psalm 118. So we can see with confidence, say with confidence, the Lord is my helper, so I will have no fear. What can mere people do to me? What a great question. If we ask the question, it could torture you. They could kill you. But the beauty of it is, that's not where it ends. There's more to come. And Daniel grasped that truth. Daniel understood there was more to come. come. Here it is, verse 12. So they went to the king and they spoke to him about his royal decree. Did you not publish this decree? Remember that, king? And the king said, yes, yes, I published a decree. You are right that that is what would happen. They would be thrown in the lion's den. And then the king answered, the decree stands in accordance with the law of the Medes and the Persians. It cannot be repealed. You are correct. You guys, you 120 satraps and you governors, you are so right. Thank you for pointing that out to me. And then they said to the king, Daniel, who is one of those exiles from Judah. He's a foreigner. Just like Jesus was considered cast out as a foreigner. He's from Nazareth. He's not even belonging to us. He pays no attention to you, your majesty, which we know is not the case. He's not obeying this decree. But we know that Daniel has done nothing but to serve the king and serve him well throughout his entire life. He pays no attention to you, your majesty, or to the decree you put in writing. He still prays three times a day. When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. The king realizes he was kind of caught in that catch-22. He was determined to rescue Daniel. Reminds you of Pilate a little bit, doesn't it? Here was Pilate. He recognized the innocence of Jesus Christ. He did everything he could, in a way, to set Jesus free, and yet wouldn't make the tough decision to actually do it. And this is exactly what we see in Darius. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. Then the men went as a group to King Darius and said to him, remember, your majesty, that according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed. So the king gave the order. Remember, this is the guy that the king wanted to set over the whole kingdom. They brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. And the king said to Daniel, may your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you. And then, look at this. He's basically thrown into his own tomb in the lion's den. He's thrown into his own tomb, and then he has the tomb sealed. A stone was brought in place over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it. Man, does that parallel what happened with Christ put into the tomb. The king even sealed the tomb, if you remember. Okay, they would actually put a ceiling around that to ensure that nobody had actually disturbed or broken into it. And then the kings would actually take their ring and they'd press it into the wax to make sure that it would actually be known that this is the king who had sealed it. And here you have not only the king, but the other administrators. So this is multiple people all recognizing the fact that, yep, we saw this sealed. It's sealed. It's sealed. It's sealed. Daniel is in there. He's in his tomb. He's going to die. We don't even need to bury him again because the lions are going to eat him from limb to limb. All of them will be consumed. A stone was brought in place, placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the rings of his nobles so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. Then the king returned to his palace. I love this. Because look at what happens here. The king returns to his palace that night without eating and without any entertainment being brought to him, and he could not sleep. You have one person who's in a den of lions. And you have one person who's in a palace. One cannot sleep. It doesn't specify what's going on with Daniel, but I got a hunch Daniel's pretty comfortable. He's doing fine because we see the evidence thereafter. But here you have the one who was not willing to be faithful to God. You have the one who was not willing to do what he knew was right. He's living his life kind of in this, I am subject to people. I want them to like me. And here he is in all of the riches you could imagine, and he's living in turmoil. He can't sleep at night. He's full of anxiety. And here you have the one who's thrown into the enemy. I don't know. I think Daniel is doing just fine. He probably had, you know, maybe one of these laser pointers, and so he was playing with the cats. You have a cat? We don't have a cat. We do this with our dog. Our dog is so dumb. If anyone wants a dog, let me know. I know where you can find one. Anyway. So the king then returned. He could not sleep. And at the first light of dawn, watch what happens. The king got up and hurried to the lion's den. He fully expected Daniel to be dead, I believe. And yet he had to know. He knew that there is a God that had answered the prayers of this Daniel in the past. He knew of the evidence. So at first light of dawn, he comes and he hurries to the den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions? Calling into the lion's den, I believe he fully expected to hear nothing, except for maybe the growl or the purr of a very large cat. And then Daniel answered, "May the king live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me because I was found innocent in his sight. Nor have I ever done any wrong before you, your majesty." The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. Talk about a resurrection in a way. Daniel was sent to his death. And here he is standing alive, pulled out of the tomb. The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him because he had trusted in his God. At the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den along with their wives and children. Before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. That just goes to show you these lions, it's not like they had full bellies. These lions were hungry. These lions were violent. And it was a miraculous thing that God did to shut the mouths of these lions. And then finally, then King Darius wrote to all the nations, peoples of every language in all the earth, "May you prosper greatly." And now he issues this decree to everyone that he knows, to all nations and languages. "I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel." This is what Darius the Mede comes up with. Look at this language that he comes up with. "For he is the living God, and he endures forever." Darius comes to realize that kingdoms only last for a little while. The Roman Empire was one of the longest lasting empires, but guess what? It's done. The Roman Empire kind of started roughly at 27 or so BC and ran to 1400 AD. That's a long run, but it's over. There's yet to be a kingdom that lasts forever, except for this one. And Daniel knew it. Daniel recognized it. And then Daniel lived his life because of it. Because Daniel understood there was more to come. If his life had ended in that lion's den, I think Daniel would have been totally okay with it. Because he recognized that's not the end. There was more to come. He prayed for help. We don't know what kind of help that was. Maybe it was just courage. Maybe it was safety. We don't know. But in either case, it does not diminish the fact that Jesus Christ came and has brought to us the truth that there is more to come. His kingdom endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the powers of the lions. So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. You know, don't get confused that we think that when we follow God, when we follow Jesus Christ, that now we'll suddenly be prosperous. That's not this message. I mean, that's in what happened to Daniel at the end, but that's not what led Daniel to say, open the windows and to pray. That's not it. What led him to open the windows and pray is the fact that he recognized that there was more to come. And then you see this beautiful picture of Daniel and the lions and how closely it parallels Jesus Christ. And I'm convinced that what God wants us to understand this morning, wherever you're at, because some of you are probably feeling like totally beat down. Look at the life of Daniel. How often do we go through his life, we see these attacks, these attacks, these attacks, these attacks. There are attacks on his character, attacks on his life. We see it over and over again. We saw it with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. It's just like this overwhelming, and some of you are feeling it right now where you're just like, I don't think I can take any more of this temptation. I don't think I can take any more of this weight, of this burden, of this life. And you feel so weighed down and just crushed and crushed. And I'm telling you, that's exactly what Satan wants to do. He wants to crush you in such a way that you're just like, I can't do it anymore. I give up. He wants to crush you in such a way that you are rendered ineffective because all you can see are your circumstances. All you can see are your lions. And he wants nothing more than to just weight you and crush you and crush you. But take courage that there is more to come. Some of you maybe look at this life of Daniel and say, I can never be like that. Let's be honest. I think that's probably true for all of us. However, we see grace. And we see this picture of what motivated Daniel, and let that be something that motivates us, that there's more to come.